I speak to you in the name of God. Amen. When the time comes, what will you tell your children's children? What will you tell them about yourself and the world you lived in? I thought about this week, first as I listened to the words from Deuteronomy and began to think about preaching. And then I was reading a book this week about Boris Yeltsin, the first president of post-Soviet Russia. I looked at the pictures in the book, one of them of him standing on top of the tank in Moscow during the breathtaking unraveling of the Soviet Union. And I remembered waking up one morning in our cottage in Wisconsin to hear my older son announce that the Soviet government had been supplanted by a coup d'etat. That was just 30 years ago. But in the aftermath of those events, with political freedom, economic chaos, and social unrest taking residence from the Ukraine to Siberia and on the eastern side of the Iron Curtain, the whole world is different than the one I lived in for the first 40 years of my life. What will I tell my children's children about my world? What will I tell them about a world of competing bully empires, where communist was an inflammatory word, where every event in life was measured by its adherence to one orthodox ideology or the other? When the time comes, what will you tell your children's children? It's not an idle question, because a funny thing happens on the way from two generations to three generations. I have an untested theory, which I hold intuitively, that the whole notion of tradition is about three generations long. Although I did not live in the world of my parents' youth, I lived with them long enough for us to call the world our common home. But my grandparents came from another world. They were born in the 1800s. They started school before planes flew or cars wheezed. They started school before Victoria died. Yet I knew them, I touched the memories of their youth, and I felt a living link to that other world by knowing them and listening to them talk to me about the world they grew up in. From all of them came traditions and ideas that still breathe in my family now. My father's father let me know in the most unpretentious way possible that a man in public life could be strong and honest and courageous, and that was expected of good men. Although my father acted the same, my grandfather was at it much longer, and he was the cause of its being a family tradition. I have a feeling, again untested, that the compiler of the book of Deuteronomy was in touch with that three-generational sense of tradition in calling the whole community of Israel to its senses. So now, Israel, give heed to the statutes and ordinances that I am teaching you to observe, so that you may live to enter and occupy the land that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, is giving you. But take care and watch yourself closely, so as neither to forget the things that your eyes have seen, nor to let them slip from your mind all the days of your life. Make them known to your children and to your children's children. This book was apparently written or compiled together in a time of social and religious disarray to remind the people of their core character. Remember, said the Deuteronomist, remember, God set you free from bondage. God brought you to the mountain. God entered a covenant with you. God gave you the commandments to live by. Remember all that and tell your children and your children's children. Forget all about tradition as an ages-long way of living and believing. It doesn't happen that way. In fact, if you live with them too long, rites and ceremonies, customs and practices, structures and institutions harden into the traditions rejected by Jesus. Hold to them without question for too long, and traditions will surely ossify. But three generations can work wonders. And so the question returns, when the time comes, what will you tell your children's children? In three generations, the memory of Jesus was transmitted from John the disciple to Polycarp the martyr, to Irenaeus, the first great Catholic theologian. And if the Eucharist over which Irenaeus presided in the late second century would have puzzled John, the glory of Jesus still would be visible. Three generations. What will you tell your children's children? In just three generations, the church in England became the Church of England. And where once celibate priests had chanted Latin masses, now married persons read the prayers in English. And if it was true in 1600 that English men and women worshipped with an order for prayer much agreeable to the mind and purpose of the old fathers, and a great deal more profitable and commodious than that which of late was used, the glory of Jesus had not dimmed. Three generations, what will you tell your children's children? While you're thinking about your answer, just a word of caution. Three generations can be just that. Just three generations, marking time, even transmitting pathologies. Oliver Wendell Holmes reached the rhetorical nadir, the bottom, in the Supreme Court case that allowed for the compulsory sterilization of a slightly retarded woman who was the daughter of and mother of slightly retarded women. Three generations of imbeciles are enough, snapped Oliver Wendell Holmes. Perhaps the patchwork gospel today, this morning, lets us know that the church has always struggled to embody both the preservative power of telling our children's children with the resilience and the capacity of our hearts. Three generations of tradition may be all we can functionally handle. Beyond that, and we disconnect. And both our children and our children's children have to listen not only to our tales, but their own hearts, which is where defilement comes, according to Jesus. In 1919, almost a century ago, my grandfather was a young man starting in business, two young children to feed, including my father. Already, Granddaddy was dabbling in the political world of the Fort Myers, Florida Democratic Party. He was a dozen years away from being elected clerk of the circuit court, to which he was reelected for four decades. Already, Granddaddy was listening to God, calling him to serve the community with that strength, honesty, and courage that he passed on to his children's children. But we believe that in that same year, Granddaddy joined the Ku Klux Klan. Certainly his racial attitudes, though not belligerent, were consistent with the Klan, and Granddaddy left a paper trail of his religious bigotry in a letter he wrote to my grandmother's parents asking her hand in marriage. After outlining at length his education and his prospects for business, Granddaddy added, "Now, as to religion, I don't see much difference between the Methodists and the Baptists, but I'm a good Protestant and I hate the Catholics." For from within, out of the heart of man, come evil thoughts. Even though Granddaddy made known the important things to his children's children, we all have had to search within our own hearts to learn to be strong and honest and courageous in public life without despising blacks or Catholics. Together today, we are the children's children of the baptized faithful who decided to spread the Lord's Supper on the altar in Temple Terrace. Think of what human traditions have changed in three generations. Our ancestors in faith would be puzzled by our current prayer book with its variety of liturgies and the participation of so many laypersons in our worship. Our ancestors wouldn't know what to make of women bishops and priests and deacons and vestry members and wardens. They would certainly find the community changed. But I imagine that if they heard us sing our songs with great gusto and tasted the wine and repeated the Lord's Prayer and saw the food for the hungry that we bring, they would be thrilled. They would know that what they had told their children and their children's children about the gracious and generous grace of God has found room in their hearts, although customs may have changed. When the time comes, what will you tell your children's children? Think about it. The time has come. Amen.